Welcome to the Firehouse Strength and Conditioning Podcast, where we discuss strength and conditioning and its place in the fire service. I'm Eric Haskins, and I'm a professional firefighter and strength and conditioning coach. Enjoy the show.
My guest today is Captain Steven Tyler. He rides the right seat on an engine in Eagle, Idaho. He still enjoys pulling lines, pulling locks, and pulling barbells. Anything he's done right is only by the grace of God and the support of a beautiful family and tremendous co-workers. I feel very fortunate to call Steven Tyler a good friend and mentor of mine. I first met Steven in the gym many years ago where I had the opportunity to teach him how to pull barbells, only for him to return the favor later by teaching me how to pull lines in the fire academy. Since then, we have shared a passion for the fire service and all things strength and conditioning. With his vast knowledge, experience, and expertise, he offers a lot of great insights when it comes to strength and conditioning in the fire service and is somebody whose opinion I value greatly. In part one of this two-part episode, we discuss what motivated him to become a firefighter and how he prepared for the job. Other topics we'll dive into is fire department fitness cultures, physical fitness tests, training, what seems to be working and what doesn't, finding a program, common misconceptions, social media fitness challenges, and modern-day Masogis. So, shall we? Let's go.
Steven Tyler.
Eric Haskins.
Welcome, buddy.
Hey, dude. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we just got in a pretty good workout.
It was a good workout.
Yeah, feeling good. Glad we did that before we got underway.
Yeah, I feel looser, more devastated after swinging 124-pound kettlebell.
Perfect.
That was a new experience.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's the heaviest bell I got, man. All right, Firehouse Strength and Conditioning Podcast. Here we talk about, strength and conditioning as it relates to the fire service. Probably don't want to use words like fitness. That's the F word in the fire service. You know, we'll do it anyways. We'll kind of start easy. What motivated you to become a firefighter and how did you prepare for the profession?
What motivated me to become a firefighter, man? I'm old now, Eric, so we're going way back. Man, I didn't have like a moment of inspiration, right? It's not like it's not like I can point to a specific moment, right, and know that that's exactly when I wanted to be a firefighter. I was actually like on a path to becoming a paramedic was what I thought I was going to do. And so when I was in EMT training, some of the instructors were firefighters and it became clear that like they liked their jobs a little bit more, right? And those, and you know, there were cool people on both sides, but that was what started to really like key me into the fire service. And so it was really just more or less linear sort of progression from there in terms of like getting more interested, getting more involved. And it was a long path for me. I mean, I was getting my EMT in like 2004. I got hired as a full-time firefighter in January of 2013. So
did you do the volunteer program?
Yeah, Eagle? I started volunteering in 2007.
Okay. With Eagle. That was with Eagle?
Mm-hmm. Cool. It was a really not a great time to be trying to become a career firefighter in 08, 09, 10, right? And of course, in the public sector, we're always like behind the private sector. So like, you know, the bottom drops out of the economy in 2008. And, you know, fire service hiring doesn't, like, rebound really until, like, 2012. So it was a tough time to be trying to get on. So, yeah, stuck it out. God was good. Like, just felt like that was the right path for me and my family. And it was. It's been, I wouldn't do anything else.
So how long have you been on then? And where are you at now in your career?
Yeah, it's like 10 and a half years at Eagle. And now I'm a company officer on an engine 43 on the west side. I like love this spot, love this season of my career. Love being able to like hopefully foster like people becoming their best, right? That's kind of like my goal as the company officers is to create an environment where they can really become like the best that they can be. Obviously professionally, but hopefully personally too.
Sure.
You asked us, there was a second part of your first question and I forgot what it
was
already.
Yeah, we got away from it. That's cool. I was wondering, how did you prepare for, so when you made that transition where you wanted to go fire, what was, I guess we can go back, what was the sense of, like, I mean, was there preparation needed? Was there a feeling for that?
So when I was just trying to get hired initially, it was like, well, how do I pass the test? You know, how do I pass the test? How do I pass the physical? How do I pass an interview? And it was pretty short-term preparation focused. And it's funny talking with people now, like, what's it take to be a firefighter? And you're like, you don't understand how big a question you're asking, right?
Yeah.
Because what they mean is, what does it take to get hired?
Yeah.
And that's what I was focused on there. But I was really lucky in over 5 years of being a volunteer that I got to see the other side of preparation, really the preparation that goes throughout one's career, and got to begin that path as a volunteer. So before I was hired full time, which was, you know, like the unending quest for skill acquisition. I really got tuned into leadership and both small unit and like organizational leadership. At that time, I was in like a management role at my job, and so it kind of like, it kind of had two ends to it. I was thinking about it on the fire service end, but then practically at my job at, you know, a crappy landscaping company, like as a 20-something-year-old trying to like get 50-year-olds to do what I wanted them to do, right? And then physically as well. So like towards the end of my time as a volunteer, I was doing less physical work at my job and more like desk work and bidding and stuff like that. And I was getting out of shape even as someone in my late 20s. So that was like when I found CrossFit and, so yeah, man, just like kind of a linear path of understanding that like this is really a constant process of preparation, and was able to begin some of those things even before I got hired on full time.
Was there any sort of like as far as going to volunteer, was there a physical test? Was there anything that you had to pass there?
Yeah, they had a combat challenge,
okay.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Which used to be a fairly ubiquitous thing, and I'm not sure everyone is tuned into what the combat challenge is, but you have access to Google and the YouTube, and you can look that up if you're curious. But yeah, we did the combat challenge. So to begin to get accepted as a volunteer to go through Firefighter One, we did the combat challenge in PT gear. And then to end your time in Fire One training and to become a volunteer firefighter, you had to do it on air with gear. And even as someone who wasn't training, really, I was just, 25 years old and working a physical job, right? Like that, I was able to do that. And like, I don't know. I don't know whether that's good or bad, right?
Sure.
I don't know whether, you know, maybe it should have been more robust. Or maybe I was just 25 and 6 feet and 180 pounds and like.
Didn't matter.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Then fast forward to when you got hired on for career.
Mm-hmm.
Same physical?
No, man. Physically, it was way different. And I'm really thankful for this. So it's kind of a convoluted story. But I got hired at Eagle Fire Department, obviously. but small department, going through some changes at that time. And Boise was hiring some classes at that time as well. So I got hired in January and worked online for a handful of months. But then went through Boise's Fire Academy. So starting in May of 2013, I went through Boise's Fire Academy, had some pretty robust physical requirements. I mean, really the main physical requirement was the mile and a half test, right, in under 11:30. And that was fine, right? I obviously passed that. But just a very physical academy in general.
Right.
And was fun. Like I wouldn't give up that opportunity for the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
that was where I really started really. So I had started training in CrossFit, I think in 2011, but not super consistently, just as a guy with a couple kids and a full-time job and volunteering. Like I was, you know, in maybe once or twice a week. When I got the call that I was going to get hired and then knew that I was going to go through Boise's Fire Academy, I was like, I really better get serious.
Right.
And then also, you know, blessed to be able to work 48/96 for a handful of months really gave me the time to work out, you know, both on duty and off, That was when I started training at Snake River, right? Which is kind of like what connected us, you know, a little while later, but that was like January of 2013. Started training, you know, 4 or 5 days a week at Snake River. And really that was like my, you know, I was 30 years old, man. That was the first time I was like consistently physically training my whole life since high school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I was going to say that was probably close to the garage days.
It was just after. So we had
just moved in.
In the old lumber building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that was a good place.
It was
a
cool space, dude. I miss it.
Yeah. One of my favorite things was, had a warm up there and it was a pick your poison. So, and I do it on like Sundays, but I'd say everyone pick a piece of equipment and we're going to go for a run.
Okay.
And I don't think I would tell them that we're going for a run, but I said, just pick your piece of equipment mm-hmm. that you want to warm up with. And then they would get it and they'd be like, all right, now bring it outside. We're going to go for a run. And people would like grab rowers. And so I'm like, yep, like grab a partner. And I'd run them around the block and on every corner, they had to like do so many reps with whatever piece of equipment they had. And like downtown Nampa on Sundays, man, you'd see this gym, like, you know, people are partnered up with the rowers on their shoulders. Like
the people at the coffee joint are like, what is happening out here?
But I mean, like I got pulled over by a cop for doing a mile long sled drag in the street once. Like, I mean, those were like the good days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? But that takes us back. And now
I know I said the C word like three times there, so I apologize.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
It'll offend someone.
It's a journey. Yeah. Right? It's a journey.
So and they've already turned it off by now. So, all right. So we're kind of talking, at least starting with like physical preparation. And so you know, coming in the fire service at that time, how have you seen, you know, especially for people that might be wondering or that are interested in joining the fire service, like what does that look like? You know, every department is different. How's that changed for your department as far as mm-hmm. the physicality?
Sure. Okay. So I don't speak for Eagle, right? The standard caveat, these are my opinions and may or may not reflect those of my employer. But it's been up and down, right? The culture at Eagle, in my opinion, the culture at my small suburban fire department is a culture of change. This entire valley is just like exploding in growth, right? And that has been the story of my fire department. So things have not been terribly consistent. And really, there's a good reason for that, and that's just that things have been constantly evolving and changing. So we have gone from, you know, like I said, doing the combat challenge, doing mile and a half runs, doing just like the Gherkin protocol on a treadmill at the doctor's, which is still part of our deal, to doing essentially nothing, to now basically work in a physician's physical, including the Gherkin protocol with, and this is just for new hires, with the Army Combat Fitness Test. So the ACFT is currently what's happening at my joint. Like I didn't make that happen, but I was like, I had some conversations that I think helped that come along. I don't think that's maybe a perfect fire department test, but I think it's quite good. I think one of the big things, having worked, so I don't know if I'm skipping ahead or whatever, but like I worked in the office. I worked as a training captain for 18 months, like as a detail position, and really got to understand like a lot of the motivations and a lot of the things that our brass deal with, that the 3 and 4 and 5 Eagle people are dealing with on a daily basis, and began to understand some of why they make the decisions that they do. And like when it comes to physical testing, like I understand why a guy like me can't just write a test and be like, hey, let's do this. You know, like they need a way to vet this. They need a way to show that this is that this is like not just some dude's opinion, right?
Right.
It needs to stand up, you know, essentially potentially in the court of law.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is the reality that they deal with. And so like the Army spent $30 million making this test, and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have been through it or continue to go through it. And like, that's a pretty good, vetting process. It's better than any fire department's ever going to have. Yeah. You can just point to them and be like, I don't know, man, they said it was cool. They spent $30 million making it, and they're putting hundreds of thousands of people through every year.
Yeah.
You know, I can go for like a B plus test or an A minus test when it's easy to just like hand over to a chief and say like, this is it and this is why.
Okay. So, all right. So with that, in a perfect world, mm-hmm. if you were to design the test, right, and this is, you aren't representing your fire department.
With yeah, just Stephen Tyler's right? opinion, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would that look like?
There would probably be a few more like firefighting specific types of movements or and then firefighting specific time domains, right? The 2 mile run comes pretty close to like a firefighting specific time domain, but it might not be perfect. I might have them working under load a little more, like the way that we do when we're in our gear. Obviously, it's not fair to put a new person in an SCBA. And particularly having them breathing air.
Sure.
So, you know, as much as that would be great, it's probably not a fair test for an untrained person. But working under load and then probably some other type of like moderate intensity, something moderate intensity under load for like the time demand of a bottle. 15, 20 minutes.
Gotcha.
I think would be good. And there's probably better ways of testing power than like the standing power throw. Yeah. I'm not sure I'm a big fan of like the standing power throw.
So when you say working under load, loaded carries or like weight vest and that thing?
Probably loaded, something with loaded carries. And you could keep the modalities changing so that like grip strength wasn't a limiting factor, right? So you could... I'm just totally spitballing.
Yeah.
You could do something like farmer carries.
Yeah.
And then a yoke, then or sandbag over the shoulder.
Sure.
Then a like a sled drag, you know, a sled pull. You know, you could change the modalities on the sled. Something to, you know, you could put them in a weight vest or again with a sandbag and have them climb towers, like something to make them work under load,
right,
under a moderate intensity for that 15-20 minute time domain.
I think that brings up a good point because it's like gear is the great equalizer.
Right.
So, and you know, we see that like working at the academy
currently
and, you know, we have someone that comes in with like an exceptional like endurance background,
right?
And like they're mile and a half, and like body weight stuff, like they crush it. But the second you put them in gear, it's the great equalizer.
That's right.
It's all for nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's all for nothing.
No, yeah.
But it's almost like they can't use their endurance capacity mm-hmm. because it's, you know, it's basically blunted by the fact that now their trunk is working so hard to manage external load and those things. So I, you know, and I bring up the testing because for probably the last year, myself and Jesse and a group from Boise Fire, like we've really been trying to explore like a new entry level test. And so kind of just looking at those different things and we looked at the studies that the Army used mm-hmm. and so we really and it's all out there. It's the RAND study. It's like a 3-part study that gives a lot of good information on like a lot of the court side of things. To you know, here's the things that if your test is designed a certain way can be challenged because it is biased.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, coming into it, like you said, it's like, man, I want to do this, and this. And it's like, hold on a second. Like, and like that study poked kind of like a lot of holes and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. And these are now the rules that we kind of have to play in. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But it helped bring some clarity to something as I was explaining this to my department and chiefs is, you know, and this is my opinion, but so, you know, we use the CPAT, right? And you talked about, you know, using firefighter specific skills and those things in an entry-level test. And given some thought about that, like I think that the entry-level test, the goal of that test is to assess their general physical qualities as they relate to the job, to select the highest potential candidate for the rigors of the fire academy. So we aren't, you know, I don't think we should be testing them for, say, like, are they fit for duty? It's like, I think that's unreasonable, right? Civilian, right. How can we expect them to be able to breathe, you know, on a bottle and those things? So why would our test, you know, assess a civilian in those things that they have no, you know, that I think would be unreasonable? However, that's what the fire academy is for, right? To at least, you know, to convert, say, the civilian to, and make them occupational ready, you know, for the fire service. So if you have an entry level test that assesses general physical qualities to see, you know, again, for the highest potential candidates for your recruit academy, and can they hold up to the rigors of a recruit academy?
Yeah.
Because that's what you want. You're investing in them, and it's like, hey, we've picked the highest potential ones, and now we trust our academy process to turn you in to the product that we need to serve our community, right? And then that's where, you know, a well-designed PT program comes in, because now you're going to bridge the gap between GPP and like SPP. So by the time they go through that breathing on air, they've made that transition from civilian to firefighter. So all of that, I think, as we're looking to build this test, brought a lot of clarity, and so I'm all for these, you know, if you want to call them simple, they're definitely not easy, like assessments. But yeah, like we need to test aerobic capacity, upper and lower body strength and those things, because it's like we're going to need you to have capacity in those domains, because we're going to be requiring a lot from you as we teach you specific firefighter skills that require those strengths, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen people in the entry level, whether it's like the community college or recruit academies, who like weren't physically ready. They didn't have the GPP, right? And now you're sort of like, as an instructor, fighting two battles. You're fighting a war on two fronts,
sure,
right? Because you're trying to teach them a skill, which is difficult enough with some folks anyway. Which is also super fun. I love teaching like people who suck at skills. In terms of like, that's actually the most fun. Anyone can teach someone who's good, right?
Like, yeah.
But you're also warring against their total lack of physical preparation, right? Yeah. And that's very difficult, and it's really not putting them in a place to succeed. So, yeah, man, getting those folks who have like the requisite GPP in place to now begin like the specific training, super important. Yeah.
Okay, so now we'll move on from the hiring, thinking about all right. So, what is your, like, has your physical preparation changed now that you're an officer and you've got your, you know, legs on, you've been on the job for a while? Does it look different now than it did when you first got on? Has that changed for you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my physical preparation is different. I don't think it's due to being an officer. I just think, you know, it's a sort of always a journey of trying to find optimal.
Sure.
Right. And as a newer firefighter, I was building fitness and training like real intently for the first time in my career or in my life, and like again was going to CrossFit and doing a lot of running and enjoying those things, and it felt like I was doing it the right way because I was getting fitter in those modalities. I was getting better at CrossFit and I was getting better at running, so that means I was doing it right.
Sure.
You know, that was like my presupposition, and a few things I think caused me to sort of question that. I had a pretty good injury in 2017. I had a herniated disc, and that like, I couldn't do all the things that I wanted to do. So it got me like digging a little deeper into training, into recovery. And then also was sparking up some conversations with some guys, some firefighters around the country. And this was at a time when I was doing the starting strength program. So it's like, I want to get stronger. And man, conversations with those guys, I realized like I was starting to find a lot of the existing methodologies, or at least the existing methodologies that I was aware of, to be lacking in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think I spent a few years of just trying to figure out what was the best way to train for the job. And so, you know, just kind of like trial by fire, trying different programs. Also trying to heal a back injury at the same time, you know, was interesting. But, you know, I mean, really, like, not to spoil the plot or anything, but like that's why we have ended up talking so much, and why we're here today, is that, you know, firehouse strength and conditioning is what I've landed on, right, as the way to, like, you were talking with Gus a few episodes ago, and he said something about like building the body you need for the life you have or the job you do. I don't remember specifically, but he's like, look, man, make yourself fit in the way that you, as an N equals one experiment, need to be fit.
Right.
Right. Because I'm not an accountant who's trying to do like Spartan runs or whatever. Like, I'm a firefighter, so I need to be fit specifically for the demands of my life. And my life is bigger than firefighting, so like I also have some other ways that I need to try to be fit, and that's an interesting challenge, and maybe we can talk about it a little bit of that today. But like, you know, specifically, I need to be fit for this. So that's where I'm at here now, you know, 10 and a half years later, is like trying to be strong. I'm trying to have excellent work capacity specific to the demands, you know, the time domains that firefighting asks of us. And I'm also trying to like be healthy in a way that increases the longevity and the quality of my life. That's pretty much it. That's it.
Man.
I just want to be really, really great at the job, man. And live forever. Yeah, Eric, that's all.
Okay. figure that out, man. Yeah. Let's do something.
But that's what's here, man. And that's what I feel like you've done, dude. And because you've been on a similar path at a way higher level, both in practice and in principle, than I have been. So that's been great, actually, because I've learned that I don't have to be the expert. I was on this path of like trying to become the expert and trying to know everything. And friendship with you and now just like following your program is so great, because I don't have to be.
Right.
Like, I trust this program, and I get to open it up every day and do the program and know that I'm doing things for that firefighting part of my life, that I'm like, that I'm accomplishing that goal.
Mm-hmm. So what seems to be like working? So you talk back about the starting strength stuff, mm-hmm. and as you kind of been going along and maybe just doing, if it was like me early on, you're like doing the same thing, mm-hmm. and like not getting anywhere or whatever. And you know, you decided to change. What are the things that work for you?
Yeah.
And then what have you found that like doesn't work?
Yeah. So what works for me, like what I think works about the program. So, and again, man, this is my experience. And this is what it's done for me is the strength focus gives me that, like that maximal or submaximal under, you know, shorter reps, like gives me that maximal strength. Right. So I'm stronger in my upper body than I've been in my entire life. I turned 41 in 2 weeks. Right. That's pretty amazing. Like I'm happy about that. I'm as strong in my lower body as I've been my entire life. That's great. Now if I can hang on to that, I would love to get stronger. I'm still trying to get that 500 pound pull. Right.
Yeah.
But like,
we'll get it.
Well, let's do it, man.
Yeah.
Let's do it. But worst case scenario, man, like if I stayed here and I'm still doing this at 50, and then, you know, I retire somewhere between 55 and 60, depending on, you know, I'm a single income family. We'll see when that can happen. Right. Yeah. But like, if I can hang on to that, and at this point, I don't see any reason why I can't, like, that's incredible.
Well, you know? And you bring up a good point, and, you know, it really, to me, the way I look at it, it's like, you're turning back the hands of time.
Yeah.
So without it, we know that, you know, human physiology and these things is going to be robbing you of your like physical attributes, mm-hmm. especially I don't want to say when you're getting up to your age, because my wife calls me almost 40 now too. I thought I was like mid 30s. She's like, no, you're almost 40. But you know, these things just start to go away from us, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to lose these aspects that would make us stronger, faster, and keep us healthy and reduce the risk of injury. And so as you age, if you're able to maintain your strength, like really, like that's a PR, right?
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, for real. Like so again, man, I'm not strong in my upper body. I never have been. I'm not built that way. I come from small, thin-wristed people, right? But I can bench 255. Great. Like benching 255 at 45 is kind of a PR.
Yeah.
Right. Like ideally, I'll be better.
Yeah.
Right. I'm thinking 295. You know. They say like 1% of the world can bench 315. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, like, dude, we'll make you.
That'd be pretty cool, right? Yeah. But legitimately, if I bench 255 at age 45, like that is kind of a PR.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Do you know who Peter Attia is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you heard him talk about I think it's like the Centurion Decathlon. His concept of this.
No.
All right. So he's got this concept. You know, he's like the subject matter expert in longevity.
Right.
And so he came up with the Centurion Decathlon, which is, you know, it's not like just 10 events, but the idea is to kick ass in the marginal decade or the last decade of your life.
Yeah.
And what are the things or the events that you want to be able to do in the last decade of your life? And so he, like, you know, like Stephen Covey, right? Like, start with the end in mind. So he looks at those things. All right, so you're in your last decade of your life. You want to be able to travel. You want to be able to, like, lift a suitcase into the, you know, overhead compartment, right? And you want to be able to, you know, pick up your grandchild or throw, you know, whatever that is. And knowing the decline that happens over your life, now you, like, your goal is to just, with where you are at right now, to push all of your attributes or capabilities up so that through the decline of the rest of your life, you land on that target, right? So, you know, the goal is to make you as strong as possible in your upper body for the job, as well as want you to be able to lift the suitcase up into the, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like a fascinating concept to me.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, we see people in the marginal decade of their life that don't have the option to do any of that, right?
Yeah. That's a wonderful motivating factor, being in the homes of sick and broken people on a constant basis.
Yeah. Yeah. So what doesn't work?
Well, so that's not the only thing that's working, right? Okay. So strength is working.
Okay.
Something I've never done since like a high schooler is accessory movements.
Oh, yeah.
Right. The accessory movements are a big part of, I think, what's making me stronger. It's putting some mass on my body as well, which is good. Like, I'm not a naturally big dude. And I think, let me throw this to you, I think there is an aspect of like these full range of motion accessories that have an element of like a mobility in them.
Absolutely.
So I don't do a ton of mobility work. I do some. But I have found that I don't feel like I need it nearly as much when I'm doing all my accessories, full range of motion.
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm getting a little bit of a mobility boost or hack, if you want to put it like that,
right,
just by doing accessory work,
yeah,
you know, intentionally.
Yeah.
And that's new for me again, like in my late 30s, now early 40s. So that's been great. And then the conditioning works for me. I like that the sort of like the modalities and energy systems are, you know, constantly varied. So that's what I like on the job. I like that there's gear workouts, not optional, that you write those. Obviously, you know, whatever, you're home that day, you know, you don't do it in gear, right? But I think it's really positive. To move into what's like for me is not working, I wouldn't say anything is not working in terms of the program as it's written for the job. I would say for me, I have to find a way. I have to find ways to, like, I'm, you know, being outside is really important to me, and spending time in the mountains, specifically like in the fall, we're doing a lot of hunting. And so that's a totally different demand. Mm-hmm. If I was not a firefighter, I would have a totally different body that would be geared, you know, to be a mountain athlete. So I have to find a way to, like, stay fit in that way, or at least in the months leading up to hunting season, so that I can put on, you know, double digit miles day after day, and have sort of like enough resiliency, like, that I can do that multiple days in a row, handle heavy loads in, like, really, you know, not crazy, but you know, environments that are not at all static. It's not flat pavement out there, right?
Sure.
Like, it's steep, it's uneven, there's deadfall, the ground is often, like, trying to escape beneath you as you walk on it, right? So that is the piece that just, like, requires something extra from me.
Right. Do you explore those things on off days, start moving pieces around so it fits for you?
Yeah, I do a couple of different things. So, like, this year I was doing just a lot of, like, like, incline walking, like, in the winter. That was what I was doing on my off days. It's just, like, walking at an incline, no load. Figured I would just add load as the year went on. This aerobic capacity program, essentially the walk run program that I'm doing, that you made available from Chris Hinshaw, is one element of preparation for that, right? So Cool. Building an aerobic base obviously sets us up for being able to, you know, like, hike at a low to moderate intensity for a long time. A couple months before, like, so really, like, next month, I'll have to start increasing the intensity of those by adding incline and load, really, is essentially what I'll have to do. So, yeah, I'll just have to start adding incline and load a couple months before hunting season. And, like, everything's every season's a little different. I'm, like, training for a specific goal, though, right?
Right.
Like, last year I had a backcountry hunt in November. The plan A wasn't too bad, but, like, understanding that we could very well end up at plan C, and that was going to be incredibly, incredibly, like, physically demanding, and I needed to be prepared for that. So I had a very specific goal of what plan C was going to look like. You know, this year plan C is not as demanding, so I'm kind of stoked about that, right? Like, I'm not going to have to do as much incline and load and dragging. You talked about dragging a sled around on the street.
Yeah.
I was dragging the sled around twice a week, like, for 60 to 120 minutes.
That's
just
awesome.
Like, up and down, you know, like, the neighbors who live, you know, half a mile down are, like, getting to know me as, like, this super weirdo.
Yeah.
And this guy walked by, he's like, "Why are you doing that?" I was like, "Because it sucks."
Yeah.
He didn't understand, but, dude. Yeah. So, I mean, those are some of the things, the ways that I have to, like, right, train for a specifically different part of my life. Thankfully, that's not 12 months a year.
That's great.
That is what it is.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. That's funny, man. In my, around here, they're pretty cool about the sleds. Our old place, you know, where we did that podcast years back, there was this dude that would come out, and I'd be doing a mile sled drag, and he'd come out and be like, "Man, you training for American Ninja Warrior?" And, kind of just, like, looked at him. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, "Awesome, man."
So every time you go by.
It's like, because, I mean.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. You tell him no. And he's like, "Oh, man, why are you doing that?" Mm-hmm. And then.
You're not really wanting to get into a conversation. Yeah. Everyone thinks it's an invitation to talk.
You're like, as you're still walking away.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It would be easier for you to stop. Like, definitely. It would be.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, man, he'd always come out, "American Ninja Warrior." That's it, buddy. That's it, man.
That's funny.
It's awesome. Okay. A little interesting one for you. What are some common misconceptions or myths about strength and conditioning in the fire service that you've encountered?
This is a question for you, dude.
And how would you debunk them? I told you. I had to get out ahead of you.
What?
Yeah.
I have this written down for you.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it's conversation. We can go back and forth. But you've been around for a while. You've done a lot of programs. You've seen a lot of different things done.
Yeah. Well, the biggest misconception is that people can do it on their own. And I'm like so sick of being a broken record, dude. Like, get a program. You told me years ago, you quoted Dan John, like, everything works, right? And of course, I think the second part of that is until it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? But like almost no one gets to the until it doesn't part, right? They just need to do something that works. Dude, everyone's just making it up every day.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? I don't understand what it is about fitness that a person, whatever, dude, a 45-year-old guy with no background just thinks that, like, well, I just do high reps, low weight. Why?
Right.
Well, it's easier on my body. I was like, they have no, like, no explanation for why they're doing the things they're doing. They don't do that in other parts of their life. Right? They actually, like, research the TV they're going to buy before they buy it. You know what I mean? They can tell you exactly why they bought the camp trailer that they bought.
Yeah.
And all of the features.
Yeah.
And why you should get this weight equalizing hitch and not that one. Right? Because firefighters are like, I got this, my buddy Andrew Murtaugh is like the number one thing in the fire service. Like, you want to know what I do? You know what I do? Right? We're constantly telling everyone what they should do.
Yeah.
And like, they've got, you know, everyone's doing all their research at the kitchen table on their smartphone all the time. But like then all of a sudden they're just going to like walk into the gym and like do a couple push-ups and some bicep curls and like get on the elliptical and call it good. Like, why would you think that would work for you?
Yeah.
So like, dude, get a program, man. Like, people need to get a program. yeah, I think most of the misconceptions are all coming from the fact that like people are referring to themselves as the subject matter authority. It's like, what, dude, you lifted weights when you were 17 in high school, right? Like, to be on the football team, like, what would that tell you about training for the fire service when you're 35 years old? Like, I don't understand why you think those two things would carry over. So what was the second part of your question?
Just how would you debunk them? But yeah, I mean,
get a program.
Yeah, I think that
you don't know anything about physical training.
Yeah,
like you don't. I know like a. I've got my fingers together, and there's very, very little space between them. This is what I know, and I've spent like 10 years trying to learn it.
Sure.
And I'm really thankful now that I can be happy knowing this. That I don't like. I can focus on something else. I can focus on being a great small unit leader. I can focus on skill acquisition. I can focus on my family and being a great father. And like, I can focus on growing in my faith. And like, I don't have to be a fitness expert because my friend Eric is. And for $20 a month, and that's, I guess, the other thing is people want to do free shit, yeah. Right? For 20 freaking dollars a month,
yeah.
All of that is just figured out for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. $20 is nothing. Like, we all throw away way more than $20 a month.
Yeah.
On top of that, all sorts of fire departments are paying for this for their people.
It's true.
And it becomes free to them, right? So, like, dude, if you are that hard up and you can't do $20 a month, go talk to your people.
Yeah.
Go talk to someone with a gold badge and get them to pay for it, right? Because it's just like the most minuscule investment you can make in yourself with, you know, massive results.
Yeah. It's all right.
Why are you asking me questions? I don't know anything. Like, yeah. This is getting really weird for me.
Yeah. Because I like your opinion on this. And at some point I'm going to try to see if Steve,
That got close there for a minute.
I want to talk to Steve, but I've got some other topics. But yeah, you know, misconceptions, and I think, you know, this is probably like something that I've probably shifted on, like not necessarily changed my mind, but like I've started to shift on is like just how specialty like people like. There's the get a program, right?
Yeah.
There's the people that are winging it, right?
Right.
And then on the other side of that is the people that are spending a ton of money on whatever like soft program there is out there
right.
for firefighting. Or like the latest and greatest SEAL program.
Right.
And I'm doing that for, you know, before I go to the fire academy mm-hmm. and those things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was something that you just kept seeing, and it's like, you know, this high level military specialty unit, and it's like, it's specifically designed for that.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just train like a firefighter? And we've talked about what those aspects
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
But
for sure,
that's another like thing that kind of like, yeah, like grinds my gears a little bit.
Yeah.
But man, like if you want to be a SEAL, like, yeah, I'd follow their program because they're going to give you the answers to go do their thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the unfortunate reality is like, we're such an untrained population as firefighters generally that like a person just deciding to go do a triathlon makes them a better firefighter.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so I have learned to not let perfect be the enemy of good.
Sure.
Right. Like a lot of folks have to be like, maybe you should just do firehouse strength and conditioning. You know, like maybe you should just like build the body you need for the job you do. But unfortunately, like realistically, for many people, like going and running a marathon does make them a better firefighter because they're at this untrained level.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, trying to retain influence on a person's, you know, life and career and not give them advice for everything that they're not asking for is, you know, probably a way I've gained some maturity.
Right.
But yeah, I would prefer to see people building the body they need for the job they do. Let's stay on misconceptions for a minute.
All right.
And another misconception. Is it a misconception? I'm trying to find a way to pick on a thing that I hate under the framework of this question.
Right? Okay.
Which is like that you have to do some sort of crazy fitness challenge
sure.
every December, every, I don't know, man. You have to do some sort of crazy fitness challenge. And like, if you don't do 75 hard, you know, like you're not fit, or if you don't, like do this burpee challenge, or if you don't do Murph, you know, like, can we talk a little bit about like sort of like the social media culture around fitness and what might look good on a reel versus what we're trying to do. And I'm invested in this program, but like what you're building in firehouse strength and conditioning.
Yeah. I've kind of got two thoughts on that. Is one, so have you read The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easton?
I haven't.
No? So he talks about that, and I'm sure I'm going to pronounce it wrong, but it's called like a Masogi or a Masogi. And it's like the annual like rite of passage.
Okay.
And, you know, it's steeped in tradition. It goes way back, but, you know, modern day like Masogis are like those things, right? Okay. And so
the polar bear plunge.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And it's the thing at the margins of your skills and experience that can have a life-changing like effect on you and the power that like those can hold. And so are the monthly burpee challenges like a Masogi? Like I don't know. Is it for that person? I don't know. And I think there's value in having like those, you know, maybe it's not an annual thing, but maybe it's just, you know, something
mm-hmm.
That is at the margins of your experience, mm-hmm. skills, and abilities
mm-hmm.
to reach for. And whether you succeed or fail, like, I don't think that's the point, but to go for it and to realize that and to have that life-changing like effect. Because I would argue that something like the Georgia Smoke Diver program
okay.
can be that for some people.
Yep.
It had a huge impact on me as well as a lot of the other people mm-hmm. that have done it. And, you know, I would almost say like that might be, you know, like a modern day Masogi. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I like, though, that you put something there about like being on the edges of your abilities, right? So we do Murph often on Memorial Day or around Memorial Day. Is that, for a trained athlete, is that a Masogi?
No.
Okay. I don't think so either.
No.
Okay.
So I would say like a Masogi, and it would be something that you have a significant amount of work up to, mm-hmm. and you train for, mm-hmm. and it might be like a once, you know, it'd be awesome. Like I would love to have like an annual like Masogi for myself. I don't mm-hmm. know what that is, mm-hmm. but just that one thing that can, you know, like, oh man, that is really going to like illuminate what my true capacity is. Yeah. But, yeah,
like some guys around here, they do something called the death hike, and they do all sorts of different things. You know, 100-miler. Last year they went to Alaska and did like some pretty gnarly stuff. Sounds like a Masogi.
Yeah, okay. And I think one of the, like, he talks about, like, one of the rules is like to get the brevity of, maybe this will answer your question. Is like, at best, you've got a 50-50 chance of completing mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
For it to have that sort of impact on mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
But no, someone who, the trained athlete, like Murph, is just a workout for a trained athlete.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I just have like a knee-jerk reaction, and maybe this is me, so like maybe I guess I'm just put this out here and you can respond to it, but like I have an aversion to these ideas that's like trying to generalize. Okay. There's an idea, especially in the fire service, that by doing a difficult workout, we're making ourselves harder, we're making ourselves mentally tougher, we're essentially like answering the bell of like doing something hard every day. And there's something to that, right? But what I'm finding, I think, is that a lot of times what we're doing is continuing to like up the ante for ourselves physically. Well, number one, doing things that aren't actually going to help our physical training like in the long term. They're not sustainable. They're not maybe even necessarily intelligent. And then additionally, I sort of reject it in another way that's like, for someone who's fit, for someone like you, Eric, like to be like, hey, man, I'm going to do 1,000 burpees today. It's like, well, okay, that is going to be hard for you, right? Like it's going to take intent and you're going to get tired. You're going to have to kind of talk yourself through that, right? But that's really not the hardest thing you could do today, right? I had to go to company inspections the other day. Getting myself, so it was June, I finally dragged myself out to go do company inspections. We have to do a certain number of them every year, and I was at zero. Getting myself out to do company inspections and telling my crew that that's what we were going to do that day, and then going and doing it with a good attitude is much harder than it is to destroy myself in a workout.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just kind of reject this idea that's like, do hard things. If you quit your workout, you're going to quit in life. It's like, well, cool, man. Like, I don't necessarily think that's untrue, but like, where else are you doing that to? You know what I mean? And maybe I'm getting off track a little bit, but like, what I love, so to bring to land the plan, what I love about Firehouse Strength and Conditioning is that I'm trying to get 1% better every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to do this lift. It's going to be based on the percentages of my last lift. I'm going to try to beat what I did last time. If I'm feeling good, if my nutrition, hydration, sleep, stress is, you know, at a good place, I'm going to hope to beat the workout time, you know, whether it's maybe a 5K row or whatever it is, maybe it's body armor, right? I'm going to try to beat my last time. I'm hoping that that's where I'm getting. I'm going to try to be stronger than I was yesterday. And I'm on a very intentional path to just do it do the thing every day. And I'm not trying to like constantly distract myself with this challenge or that challenge. I think the challenges are a distraction, man. Like, keep the goal the goal.
Right.
I don't know, dude.
Yeah. A 1,000 burpees for me, I would just have to ask you why. And you would need a pretty good reason. And if it was for to become fitter, a few other solutions to that problem that right. I think I would like veer towards.
Right.
But if 1,000 burpees is your thing, yeah. I think what I've also like over the years, and I was just talking to some people, and I probably talk about this on every episode, is motivation. And originally, like, I didn't get why people like weren't motivated by the job,
mm-hmm.
like to be healthy, be fit, do the things, want to be better, like took it seriously enough,
yeah.
because the job was the number one like motivator to do the things. And I didn't understand like why like that wasn't enough. And for many, like, that's not like the thing. And I've found there seems to be three umbrellas or three kind of communities and where people get their motivation, and it's the job. That's awesome. People want to be better for what they do away from the job. Like, that's why I want to be fit. Like, the job affords my family, puts food on the table,
mm-hmm.
but what I really love is like the hunting, the fishing, whatever off duty, and that's what I really want to be fit for. And maybe that thing is like the Boston Marathon, and mm-hmm. it's like, okay. Or they want to look better naked,
mm-hmm.
like that. That seems like it seems to be these three parties: it's on duty, off duty, or like, man, I just want to look good naked. And so, for me, it's more trying to figure out like what the motivation is behind their thing, because the real intent is that they start like moving the ball forward. And you said it's like, yeah, they train for a because as a community we are suffering from, you know, sedentary behavior. It's like I think like the studies show like over 75% of the fire service doesn't meet the guidelines for physical activity of 150 mm-hmm. minutes of aerobic activity a week. Mm-hmm. And that is for like general population, just to maintain health.
Yep.
And over 75% of the fire service doesn't do that. So training for like a triathlon will move the ball forward for right. us, because it's got them doing something right. And so, and that's unfortunate, but I think with so many that just need to be doing something instead of nothing, there's value in, all right, what's your motivation?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the same motivation as mine. And then my goal is one to like get you moving, doing whatever you're willing to do. And then like, once we've got you, then we can start like hopefully guiding you in a direction that'll be better for you.